nothing, Sylvia. The man does not exist, okay? So I decided, oh, buddy, I gotta dig a little deeper. There's no Pepe. Sylvia, you gotta be kidding me. I got boxes full of Pepe. All right, so I start marching my way down to Carol and HR. And I knock on her door and I say,
all right, no, I can watch this all night. We got to start the show.
Gee, man, everything I'm going to say is going to have a drum background in my head now. Welcome to Corn Killers, our mission to report the intel from the front lines of the corn cutting revolution so you can watch the stuff you love when you want, where you want, on whatever device you please. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Brian Brushwood, and that was a video with drums accompanying Charlie Day on Always Sunny in Philadelphia ranting about Pepe Sylvia. It's so amazing to me how musical we are, and we don't even know it.
Yeah, I'm not even kidding. After watching just that little bit of that video, I'm hearing drums with everything I say. It's going to be really annoying for the rest of this show.
Well, and there's the other guy that does the like guitar chords. He figures out like the actual, you know, it's like, oh, that's F minor and blah, blah, blah. And it's amazing. Anyway.
Yeah, it turns out music, just a natural outcome of humans being humans.
No guest, just you and me. Finally.
Oh, thank goodness.
Finally. Get to loosen up.
We get to be ourselves.
Yeah.
We can let our hair down. I don't have to wear this stuffed shirt.
No. Oh, yeah. We're going to strip.
Yeah, I don't have anything else, so I should probably leave that on. Let's instead talk about our primary target.
Yeah, sounds good.
You know, speaking of getting back to basics, Brian, remember the olden days, in the early frame rate days when all we had to talk about was Netflix? There just wasn't any other news.
Well, remember they had that streaming service and didn't have a lot to offer, you know, because everybody knew that you got Netflix through the mail, not over the internets.
Remember when we were like, Netflix is going to make their own shows?
What? Crazy talk.
I think it's pretty genius. Anyway, we're going back to the basics today because we've prepared Netflix stories for you three ways today, starting with our most substantive one. Netflix Vice President of Product Todd Yellen, who I imagine says everything like this.
he's like, oh, great. Another Yellen meeting. He's like, you're damn right. Everybody in the room.
Netflix will phase out its star rating system in favor of a thumbs up, thumbs down system starting sometime in April.
So
the company actually rolled out the system to a few hundred thousand users as a test. And when they did, they found that they received 200% more ratings because people were willing to do a thumbs up, thumbs down, whereas star ratings, there was just too complicated. Well, and Netflix also is going to start showing a percentage below titles based on how likely it thinks you'll enjoy the title based on how others with similar viewing habits rated it.
This is straight up one of the aspects of humanity that we don't like to, I don't know, we like to think we're better than we are. We as humans just hate complicated decisions, right? And so the simple thumbs up, thumbs down, like, I don't know, yes, no, like that's an easy decision to make. But separating, like, well, I don't know, is it 3.5 yes or is it 4.5 yes?
We know that that one person out there, it has a perfect system for creating star ratings, and you use all 5 stars equally distributed, but you're unusual. Most people don't.
Well, so here's the reason this makes sense is that by removing the complication, and yes, we all agree it's ridiculous. Like, you should be able to pick, you know, between 1 and 5 on a scale or whatever, but if the barrier to entry of that is that you have to engage yourself to a level that you don't want to, and if they can reduce that barrier to entry by simply making it like having a good time, yes, having a good time, no, the result, the benefit of that is that you get more data because more people will just hit a straight up thumbs up, thumbs down. Like, it's good, it's crap. And then the algorithm will figure out, like, okay, this many people said thumbs up, this many people said thumbs down, and the people who said thumbs up to this say thumbs down to that, and don't worry, I got to figure it out. Like, that is nothing but awesome in my book.
Yeah. Because this isn't about like, oh, delicate flowers can't handle a 5-star system. No, this is about if it takes me more than 1 second, it's not worth my time. Right?
Correct.
People are like, if I have to think about 5 stars, forget it. What do I get out of it? Nothing. I'm just going to keep going and watch my movie. Whereas if it's a simple thumbs up, thumbs down, they might take the time to do it, which of course leads to all the good effects that Brian's talking about. I'm also interested in this percentage rating because somebody pointed out on Daily Tech News Show that what they show you now in star ratings is a prediction of what they think you will think based on your viewing habits.
Correct.
It's not the aggregation, right? If you see 3 out of 5 stars, somebody else might see 2 or somebody else might see 4 based on their viewing habits. So this percentage is going to communicate that more and not appear like, again, with stars, I forget that that's a customized star rating. If I see a percentage score, like we're 80% certain we think you're going to watch you're going to like the show. That makes more sense to me.
By the way, that led to the awesomely hilarious circumstance of Jason Murphy encountering hacking the system on Netflix and seeing it rated at 1 star because it assumed he's the kind of guy that would hate a reality television show like
Jason
that.
Murphy, we know you're in the show, but you won't like it. That's hilarious. Netflix Chief Product Officer Neil Hunt also said the company is exploring different cuts of its shows for different platforms since certain shots meant for a big screen can be hard to see on a phone.
Man, this is one that I'm conflicted, but I feel like I have a gut instinct that I think is right. So I'm conflicted insofar as if you're a filmmaker and you set up every shot exactly perfect, like, do you remember what a big deal it was when The Wire was re-released in HD?
Yeah.
And it wasn't until it got the blessing from, I forget who wrote it, he basically said okay, look, changes the context, like take a look at this scene, but now they feel isolated as opposed to feeling in the middle of a crowd and so on. On the flip side, I feel like all any of these movies and television shows do are trying to convey a thought. Every movie, every television show you see is just a thought in somebody's heart that is trying to make it to the other side, right? And so in that regard, it seems like it should the method of transfer of the thought should change based on the medium through which people experience it, right?
Yeah, well, when you're trying to convey that thought and you're thinking, okay, people are going to be looking at this on a 30 to 50 inch screen, so I'm going to put the person over to the right and I'm going to have them a little dim because I want to convey that they're in the shadows. But then they're watching it on a 5-inch screen and suddenly they're in the corner and you can't see them. And it's like, okay, this isn't getting the message across. So if you could say, when it's on that big screen, do exactly what I originally intended, but on this small screen, lighten up a little so it's easier to see them, but they still look dim, and yeah, move them over to the center a tiny bit so they're not like off the screen.
Well, and plus also like so you might in response to that, somebody might say, oh, well, that's not what Sam Peckinpah meant when he made this movie. He made this movie to be exactly this way. But to which I would respond, like, if Sam Peckinpah wants to, number one, still be alive, and number two, wants to manage that experience, it's like, yes, you're always going to have other people touch and affect your work. You know, the director comes up with an idea, and somewhere down that waterfall of responsibility, somebody at some point has to decide, well, it makes more sense this way or that way. And plus also, you know, we're not so pure. We grew up on 4x3 televisions watching, yeah, pan and
old
scan.
Pan and scan, man.
Yeah,
pan,
right?
And scan.
So,
yeah.
So to me, this is just another artifact of the fact that there will never be a time that we all unify on the same aspect ratio. And so knowing that, I'm okay. I'm not only okay, I'm cool with changing the art.
To me, it's all in the execution. If they're doing this, let me put the needle all the way on 100% acceptable for me, which is they do it with the creators for things that Netflix has created. So, and it's optimized to not appear odd. You should never even notice that it's happening when you're watching it on your phone, because it just looks right. Like that, that would be the amazing thing. And maybe even there's little algorithmic magic going on. And so it's really easy to do, and they can do it for everything at once. And all it takes is the creators of the, of Stranger Things to just look over the series and go, yeah, no, that looks great. That looks great. On the unacceptable side of the needle is this is just an algorithm. Not a human never looks at it. It screws things up as often as it helps things. And suddenly, you know, I'm looking at Citizen Kane on my phone and it looks weird and odd and wrong, and I don't like it at all. So to me, it's all in the execution.
You know, what's funny is I think I'm farther to the left of you on 100% wrong. Like I think even if it's just an algorithm that no human being ever looks at, I think that the mere fact that you are adding a layer of editorial input, even if it's a robot computer, that acknowledges that the format that people are watching in it is different based on, you know, based on a cell phone versus a computer versus a home theater or whatever. I'm okay with that. Even if it misses the mark, even if it's a robot that does the job badly, I think I'm okay with the idea of installing another editorial layer that at least takes the method of consumption into effect.
Finally, Deadline reports Netflix has hired Scott Stuber. He is a Hollywood producer. He's done Kill the Messenger, Ted 2, Patriot's Day. He is going to be an in-house producer for Netflix. So as they continue to try to get higher quality movies, higher quality stars to be in those movies, to win awards, they've now hired a top line producer to help them with that.
I got to tell you, it at this point, and this is the part where if we're drinking at a frat party, I pull Netflix aside and I'm like, hey man, are you number one, you seem to be drinking an awful lot, Netflix.
Out of this tiny shot glass.
Like, this is the point where I almost want Netflix to cool it. Like, take it easy, man. Everybody knows you're legit. You got this.
They're not doing it to change your mind. They're doing it because they need the talent. I don't think that's wrong.
Do they need the talent? Do they not have the talent at this point?
It's all about relationships in Hollywood, right? So if Scott Stuber comes in and is like, oh, yeah, I can get you a bunch of people you couldn't get on the phone before. Then, yeah.
All right. I that's like a straight up, like you're writing a $200,000 check. And then, you know, for the next year, certain phone calls will be answered that weren't previously answered. Yeah.
Think about it. Patriot's Day, Ted 2, and Ted. Who's in all three of those movies? Mark Wahlberg.
Ted 2 and Ted?
Yeah, I know.
So, sorry, I tried to steal.
I'm just saying, he's going to be able to get
tried to steal.
He's probably got Mark Wahlberg's number.
He flipped it and it didn't land.
Ted 2 and Ted? Patriots Day 2? Patriots Ted Day?
No, it's nothing but good news as far as Netflix is. I mean, everything Netflix is doing is 100% right, and they continue to crush it.
Which... probably we've just damned them. So apologies, Netflix, when it all goes in the toilet for us.
Gave you the curse.
Hey, you know what, though? You guys can make sure that this show stays cursing Netflix for much longer by supporting us directly on Cord Killers. We don't take advertisements. But that means that when you support the show, it's not because you had to go buy something and then a cut of that went to us. All the money goes directly to us. We cut out the middleman. So if you've got an extra dollar per episode, we would love to have it. And it means the world to us. Patreon.com/cordkillers.
And I tell you what, man, this is unique among all the shows I do in that we actively give people methods to save money, whether it's through the chicken challenge or whether it's, you know, through cutting the cord altogether. If you have experienced any kind of monetary benefit, why don't you just throw a buck an episode our way? You'll never ever notice it. You'll never ever feel it. You'll see it every week on your or every month on your credit card bill, and you'll think like, yeah, no, that's good. I bought those guys a beer this week. Thank you.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's move on to how to watch the things you want to watch. The Information is a news source out there that puts itself behind a paywall in order to fund journalists to do great investigative reporting. And it says it has sources that say next week, Twitter is going to open its live streaming API. And by next week, this report was from last week, so that means this week, to media firms and announce partnerships with firms that provide back-end services for live video streaming. The whole reason for all of this would be for Twitter to make it easy for anybody who wants to stream live video on Twitter to do it, as long as they're a big enough organization. So they already own Periscope, where everybody can just go live. But let's say you're an organization that's like, hold on, we have a three-camera shoot. We're a little more advanced than that. We're a media organization. Periscope isn't good enough for us. Can we meet with you and set up something better? Now Twitter would have an API to say, you don't even need to meet with us. Here's the API to plug into, and you can do higher quality streams without having to have a big NFL-size deal.
Dude, I'll tell you what. Periscope is a curious animal, because I was talking to Bonnie recently about different social media platforms, and it occurred to me talking this through that Twitter has done a fantastic job of not making any decisions. By which I mean, they have realized that what they have is electric and right, and they're not screwing it up, right? Like their default action is we're not going to change anything. So it's like, for example, like on a Twitch TV, if you go live on Twitch TV, you can expect to accrue more. If you have engaging content, you can expect to accrue more and more people over the duration of your stream. Whereas like Periscope, like you get the one shout, the one announcement that you're doing a thing. And then after that, It's you get the initial rush and then everybody just falls off, no matter how good you are, right? So it occurs to me, the mere fact that they're making this API available is significant, because Twitter has been up until now a very cautious company. So it makes me want to kind of read the tea leaves on why they're making a fairly bold decision to let everybody, you know, get that kind of stuff.
Well, and it's not wide open, everybody. It's everybody who gets approved to use the API, right? At least that's the way the Information is presenting it. And they just announced another sports deal. They've been announcing a bunch of these live deals. This one's with the National Lacrosse League. National Lacrosse League in the United States had no national television presence. And so now it's going to be live streaming its shows or its games, rather, on Twitter. But one can imagine that what Twitter's been trying to do is say, hey, we're the home to watch what happens, right? But every time they have to do this, they have to sit down with the National Lacrosse League or with CNN for the debates or with, you know, CBS for or PB or ABC for election night coverage. And they have to work out how they're going to do it. This API, the promise is, hey, we can have more of those kinds of things. We can still decide who gets that level of access. But now Bloomberg, Washington Post, whoever, you guys can just go and do it and live stream. And then we're on the back end, not having to put out so much effort setting the things up. We can just promote them by putting them up on your moments page or whatever.
Yeah, I gotta admit, I really thought Twitter would have been farther ahead on the dominating the live in the moment space than they are at this point. And they don't
tell us where to see the stuff easily. That's
the problem, is that they've not institutionalized any kind. And again, this is the smart thing Twitter's doing, is not screwing up their golden goose, right? That it's like, we're not going to make any core level changes. We're not going to be a Facebook where everybody laments like, oh, remember old Facebook before they were cramming videos that were playing, you know, without any audio down our face at all times. I don't know what the right call is for them, but I do appreciate their conservatism, their cautiousness in this regard.
Yeah. Well, when Justin Robert Young and I were talking about it on DTNS last week, one of the things that I mentioned was maybe the reason that they don't have a page that's very clearly, here's all the live video on Twitter, is because all they have is occasional things like NFL and a bunch of Periscope videos. And they just don't think that'll look very good. And so this could be a step to fill in the middle gap, so that every time you go there, there's something interesting, and it builds repeat visits.
Yeah. And there definitely are moments like, you know, the Arab Spring moment was a moment very much of Twitter and very much in the moment of feeling, you know, Ferguson, you know, news events.
Yeah.
The you know, sporting events and I guess award shows and so on.
Debates, elections, but those things just aren't happening every day.
Correct. And again, like it leads me to think that they're making the right move by not making a move, which feels weird. But also, I thought they would have made a move by now.
Yeah, it's the right move not to make a move until it's too late to make a move.
Correct. And unfortunately, and the good news is don't rely on two podcast hosts to tell you when that time is. In fact, not. You should hire your own people. Go ahead. You have our permission.
If there were a person from Twitter listening to this, they would be going, yeah, we did that. We have that guy. Trust us. We think we're doing it right. I mean, obviously, they would be doing it differently if they didn't. All right, let's move on to what to watch in Under Surveillance. Not like real estate. It's all about location, location. Under Surveillance. All right, the final Leftovers trailer has arrived. You get to see Kevin sort of acting a little reluctant to be thrust as the face of a new movement. Leftovers returns April 16th. You are the bigger of the Leftovers fans. What did you think of this, Brian?
By the way, I failed you. I didn't watch this. So the whole gang moved down to Australia, right?
That's what it looks like based on the trailers. Yeah.
They
show Kevin with his dad down in Australia.
I gotta tell you, I like the Leftovers. That's all I'm gonna say.
There's a lot of imagery in here pointing out, like, hey, remember how Kevin died and was buried for 3 days and then he came back?
I'm cautiously optimistic. How about that? How's that for a bold stance?
Here's a story I wouldn't have cared about until I moved to California, because my whole life, except for a brief period where I lived in the Eastern time zone, I lived in the Central time zone. And in both cases, you get Saturday Night Live live. It's a running joke with Eileen, my wife, that I think Saturday Night Live is going to be on at 10:30 still, because that's when it was on when I was growing up, because we got it live because it's on at 11:30 Eastern. But here in California, we get it at 11:30, which means we get it 3 hours after it was live. Well, starting with the rest of this season, the last four episodes of this season, NBC is going to broadcast Saturday Night Live live in all four U.S. time zones. So you will get it at 10:30 Central, 9:30 Mountain, and 8:30 out here in the Pacific time zone.
What's funny is my analysis was just summed up by the title of this Verge article that says SNL will now air live in all U.S. time zones due to self-importance. Like in some way, and it's not unwarranted. There is some level of it. This is an acknowledgement, like, yeah, we're a cultural touchstone of parody and of mocking the current state of X, Y, and Z. So it's like, I agree. I think they should. And I'm glad they do.
That headline in particular is responding to NBC's Robert Greenblatt telling the Daily Beast, SNL is enjoying its most popular season in two decades and is part of the national conversation. And we thought it would be a great idea to broadcast to the West and Mountain time zones live. Part of the national conversation sounds pretty self-important.
Yeah. But on the other hand,
see this outside of that as, hey, you know what NBC realized? Live is the big advantage of being a broadcast network these days. Otherwise, everyone just watches your thing on Hulu.
Yep.
Or on demand.
Yep.
So why force them to watch it on demand live at 2 hours or 3 hours later? Just take advantage of the fact that you get better ratings when you broadcast things live these days.
Well, keep in mind also, Bryce is in the chat snarking, saying, I never understood why it wasn't simultaneous to begin with.
It's not being snarky. I literally just don't.
The reason is the British version of this is they have something called the watershed. There's a certain time after which certain programming is acceptable and a time before which it is not allowed. If it's on at 9:30 in, or I guess Is it 9:30?
No, I mean, I'm sure that I feel like that works in reverse. It was Saturday Night Live is going to be on at 11:30 so we can get away with more things versus let's put it on at 11:30 so that it can get away with more things. Mostly it was we're going to delay it on the West Coast because that's when it's on. And if we put it on at 8:30, that thing that we're running at 8:30, which is designed to get the most viewers at 8:30, isn't going to be on.
Correct.
And that back in the days of three networks, that made sense, right? It was like, no, we designed this for this time period. We think it gets the best ratings. Saturday Night Live was just filling the schedule. They're like, we have good things for 8 o'clock. Let's put the sketch comedy on, maybe get a few more eyeballs in that time zone, in that time slot that doesn't get a lot of eyeballs. Why would you put it in primetime if you didn't think it was good? If you're going to put it at 8:30 California, you want to put it at 8:30 Eastern too. These days, that kind of logic has fallen apart because people watch on demand all the time.
Correct.
And live actually is a better draw for people to come to broadcast when they could just wait and watch it later anyway.
Well, and also Saturday is notoriously bad now for broadcast or for anything on TV.
Right. Yeah. Right. Well, and to be honest, that was always sort of the marketing for Saturday Night Live is like, mm-hmm. here's a time slot nobody wants, nobody likes. Yeah. We can do literally anything. Who cares?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that time slot logic has kind of been blown apart by the fact that you not only have so many networks and so many programs, but people are watching Netflix whenever they want, right?
Yeah.
So you may not get them anyway. Why not give them something live? Because then the reason to watch it as it broadcasts is, hey, it's live. You never know what might happen.
Well, and to be honest, like think about what an indictment this is about the value. Like the only reason this happens is because the value of an 8:30 p.m. slot on a Saturday night on NBC has now descended to so low a point that it's like, screw it. Just let Saturday Night Live be on at that point.
Saturday Night Live ratings have gotten good enough
right.
that they've met the descending 8:30 p.m. West Coast.
Exactly. That's exactly it, where it's like, this is straight up a value proposition.
Yeah. All right. Finally, Columbia Pictures has released the first poster for The Dark Tower, set to arrive July 28th. It's an upside down city street. Makes perfect sense to me because I've read the Dark Tower series. It doesn't change my opinion one way or another about what I'm going to think about The Dark Tower.
Please be good. Please be good. Please be good. Please be good. Please be good.
I'm cautiously optimistic because they went ahead and made the move of putting it in the blockbuster season in July.
They did. Just please be
gutsy.
Good. Please be good. Please be good. Please be good. there's so many indications, and I don't want to take us down a rabbit hole here, but it's like there are so many things happening in the Stephen King world that make me worried that it's just not good, and it's not going to be a franchise, and it's not going to be a thing, and it's such a crime if that is the case because it's a good story. Like you spent a year down that rabbit hole.
Yeah. No, I have fond memories of living in San Rafael, California, sitting outside on weekend afternoons in the sun, listening to audiobooks of the entire Dark Tower universe, not just the mainline series, but all of the ancillary Stephen King books as well.
Yeah. Now, and it all ties together. Fingers crossed.
All right. What we're watching, I'll start because against my own will, so to speak, Eileen made us watch Iron Fist. She was
But before you tell me anything about it, I've never experienced a preemptive backlash like I have with Iron Fist. Like I was sitting here minding my own bees, and then all of a sudden, just this wave of internet. Hey, have you heard the news? Iron Fist is garbage. It's garbage. Don't watch it. And I'm like, Wow, I did not ask for or intend to get this prescription from you.
So, I mean, my wife works for Rotten Tomatoes now, so she's exposed to the raw radiation of, you know, this thing's getting 8%. Oh, okay, it's up to 16, 17% on Rotten Tomatoes. So that, I think, is what caught her eye. And then she's seeing all that stuff on social media herself. So she's like, she kept saying, I really am curious. Is it really that bad? And then she read a couple of reviews from people we know and trust who said, I don't think it's that bad. Odokta was one of them where he was like, he's like, I don't like any of them that well. This one's not any worse than the others. So we watched it. And I'll be honest, it is obviously going in with expectations set so low, going to change how you approach it. I see what people are complaining about. Personally, I think there's one actor in particular whose performance I do not like. He's the guy that plays Ward. He's probably fine, but I just didn't like this performance. Could be the editing of him. I don't know. I do not like it. On the other hand, the story itself is just bland. It's not bad. It's not making me roll my eyes. It's not making me hate it, but it's bland. We've watched four episodes. The most recent two episodes we watched as we were falling asleep, and I fell asleep in the middle of the episodes and didn't feel like I really missed anything.
That's a ringing endorsement. That's always good.
A few people that have watched the whole thing said it isn't very good in the first half, but towards the end it picks up and it becomes worth having watched. That said, I don't know if it's worth watching.
You watch anything else?
I watch The Expanse. I watch Justified. You know, I never mention it, but I watch Twin Peaks every week because we're doing Damn Fine Podcast with Ron Richards. So if you're a Twin Peaks fan, you got to go check that out. DamnFinePodcast.com.
What's the countdown to the new Twin Peaks?
What's the countdown? May 21st.
Okay. Right on. Yeah. Two more months.
We're getting there. I know you have watched a couple things, one of which I also watched because Eileen wanted to watch them. And one of those is Bryce is on the Lookout. So I don't know how we want to proceed here.
You know what? Let's hear Bryce.
Okay.
Give a pitch.
Sure. Hi, everybody. I, as a lot of people had for over a month, heard the great, great things about Legion. Legion's great. Go watch Legion. And up until I started watching Legion, I had no idea what it was about.
There are two things I hear about Legion. Number one, you should watch it. Number two, I don't understand anything.
I don't know what it is. Yes. So I'm going to give you a very spoiler-free pitch on what Legion is. So if you are hesitant and don't know what it is. Okay, imagine real world today. If you hear voices and you see things that aren't actually there, you are that is symptoms of schizophrenia. Now, if you are in the X-Men universe, that is also potentially telling that you might have superpowers, right? That's kind of a weird dichotomy, that the X-Men universe is still the civilization that we live in. So, in a world where schizophrenia sometimes looks like superpowers, what happens if you actually do have superpowers and have been diagnosed with schizophrenia? That's based the very low level bottom, that's the tile, that's the vinyl tile on the floor of Legion. But I think it's really cool. There's a lot of intrigue and espionage and you don't know what's real. And a lot of, especially the first episode, is told very out of order. It's not super linear. The first episode especially looks amazing. Aubrey Plaza's amazing in it as a character who I don't want to tell you anything about. And by the way, the reason this is on the Lookout is because it is on Hulu. You can now watch it up to date on Hulu, which you usually cannot do for cable shows. So there are six episodes already up, and you can watch it on Yahoo.
Yahoo.
And the FX Now app. It's really cool, and it has this really great, like, 60s style, like, retro-futuristic aesthetic to everything that makes you... I'm like five or six episodes in. I still don't exactly know what time period it's supposed to be, which is kind of really great.
They have computers and cell phones.
Tablets specifically.
No, exactly.
But still, even then, like, you don't see a lot of tablets or a lot of phones.
Okay, all right. This is all stuff I should probably save for a spoiler in time.
Yes,
but
no,
I'm just
this
gonna
is
say
a spoiler-free thing. It is an X-Men show that has no X-Men. I don't know anything about X-Men, and
you don't have
I have found
to.
I have found have no associations with X-Men, and I think it's so much better because we were doing weird things earlier today.
The only
and you said a thing, the name of someone that was not ever named in the show yet, and I was like, "There's that thing has a name that I don't like that. I don't want to know that this is X-Men thing."
Oh, really?
I really like the view that this is not an X-Men thing.
Well,
X-Men thing I've heard of this is that they say the word mutant sometimes.
Yes, correct.
Yeah.
The only thing that you left out in your pitch that I would strongly encourage people to factor in, imagine if a sideways piece of the MCU was directed by Wes Anderson. It has...
I think that's just... I think that's more of the first episode.
Maybe. That's fine. Okay. But stylistically, that attention to detail, that type of jaunty, happy, incredibly human aspect to the whole thing. It was enchanting. I watched it twice yesterday. I watched it once, and then I was like, "Hey, Bonnie, you should watch it." And you ever have that, Tom, where it's like you know that the price of making somebody else watch is that you're gonna watch it a second time? And I very gladly paid that price and watched it a second time.
That's so funny because Eileen wanted to watch it the other night, and I had the opposite reaction. I was like, "Oh, really? I'm just gonna play Zelda then. I kind of wanted to watch something that I had seen before." And we almost got in a little fight over it. And then I finally was like, fine, just watch it. And she liked it so much that she then wanted to watch the second episode. I'm like, all right, fine. I guess I'll watch the second episode because I totally agree with the Wes Anderson stylistic resemblance. It's very much like Twin Peaks in a way, because Twin Peaks is not like a David Lynch film. But it has that David Lynch stamp because David Lynch actually worked on Twin Peaks.
Sure.
And Twin Peaks, even though it takes place in the present day, which is the 90s, the early 90s, it looks 50s-ish. They do a bunch of 50s stuff. Legion is like, yeah, it takes place basically in the present day, but we're going to make everyone look like they live in the 60s.
That's right. This is
very much an intricate story and an intricate world where – especially Tom, I don't know how far you had gotten before you started rewatching episodes, but I could definitely go back and rewatch some stuff and see,
people pick up more things, definitely.
But the problem with an intricate story, and it's still unfolding, is that we don't know that there are answers, which is a very tough sell for a lot of people. But
it gets a little too clever for its own good sometimes.
I don't mind any of that. I unabashedly loved how challenging Lost was. And sure. Even though, you know, you could argue, we can all argue about whether or not it stuck the landing, but I enjoyed every piece of that journey.
Sure, but just for some people.
Yeah, sure.
For some people, actually, Lost was like frustrating, though.
Yeah, no. So, some people, but again,
but also there's like, Marvel this, fingers in it. So
this
you'll
is the type of show that you cannot play Hearthstone while playing. Like it will suck you in. It is challenging.
Yeah. I tried to do emails.
I love
and you can't do it.
Challenging content like this. It was great.
If I may, I would like to underline this conversation and say, folks, if you want more about Legion, you gotta check out Spoiler in Time because we're gonna talk about it there.
We're gonna start with just episode one because Brian's only at episode
one. Yeah, I've only seen the one, but I've seen it twice. Okay. So I got lots to share.
We'll keep it to episode one. So the only other thing that you watched was you rewatched all of Rick and Morty, what, the third time, fourth time?
I don't know which lap it is, but it's so easy. It is astonishing how fast that goes through. Like you could watch like at 20 minutes an episode. Number one, just
and
buy
only like 20 some episodes.
Yeah. So just buy the whole series on Amazon. Dive in. The craftsmanship on that show is so tight. It is so good that even if you've seen all of them, you will get more out of it watching it as a second, third, fourth, fifth time.
I'm just looking to see, like, I can understand the impulse to want to buy it so that you always have it there.
It's on Hulu right now.
Is it on Hulu at the moment?
Yeah, but you gotta wait for ads.
No, you have to get it free. The whole run.
One of my favorite things, and maybe because I'm watching it without ads, is the self-aware nods they do to the convention of recapping the story up to that point coming out of a commercial break,
sure.
You know, where they're just, you know, you did it, Morty, you blew up the world. It's like, well, I know, Rick, why would you say that out of nowhere? It's like, I don't know. It just seemed like kind of thing I would recap right now.
All right, folks, if you got something we should be on the lookout for, email us cordkillers@gmail.com. Before we get to the front lines though, Brian Brushwood has a personal plea for what is the most forward, cutting-edge show you can watch these days.
It is.
I'm not even joking.
Justin, Robert Young, and I, our new project is now out. Head on over to discoveryvr.com, and you'll see us playing Hialeah, traveling through the Everglades. You'll see us swimming with manatees. You'll see us watching an orchestra be conducted and so on. It's freaking great. And if you have a phone, which I'm assuming you do, if you have a phone, go ahead and download the Discovery VR app. They're adorable vignettes. Like all of the joy of our experience, it really comes through. It's amazing to watch it in 360 panorama, basically. And I can't say enough positive things about it. It's great.
And it's on Oculus and Rift, or yes. Oculus and Vive.
Yeah, and the Vive.
Go check it out, folks. All right, let's move on to the front lines.
Front lines.
Just a few quick things this week. ABC News Apple TV app now lets you have up to 4 of its dozen news feeds on the screen at once. Just something you might want to know.
Simultaneous viewing.
I know. You don't get it, do you?
Are you okay with it?
I mean, I can see simultaneous viewing of multiple different news sources if there's a big event going on, because that way if I see, oh, somebody's interviewing that person I want to know about, I'll switch over. Simultaneous from 12 different ABC sources, I'm not sure that I'm going to make that much use of, but who knows?
I mean, it's like I'm going to say this and it's going to sound terrible, but it's like only during 9/11 do I want that. And I'm not hoping for another 9/11 anytime soon. Yeah, right.
If that's your level, you don't want this to be a feature you need. Yeah.
Yeah. Meanwhile, the New York Times reports that Netflix has agreed to finance a restoration project for the unfinished Orson Welles film, The Other Side of the Wind. Producers Frank Marshall, Philip Jan Rimsa, and Peter Bogdanovich had previously secured the rights to the unfinished film in 2014, but they only raised $406,000 out of a needed $2 million in the crowdfunding campaign to complete the project. Netflix agreement will require renegotiation with the film's rights holder. What's it about?
I don't know. It's an Orson Welles film, though, Brian, and it was never finished. And here's the reason Netflix is going to fund it. It's got a cult following. People have been fascinated with this film and wanting to know what's in it and who all is involved and how it's going to turn out. And it's got some big name stars from at the time in the early 80s when it was begun. This is brilliant for Netflix. All the Orson, this is like every niche series that they do where maybe you don't care, but the people who do are going to be so stoked, and it's going to make them really happy and have more positive associations with Netflix.
Yep.
Crimson Hexagon, a social media analytics company, found that discussion of cord cutting is more common than actual practice. Stunning. Mentions of cord cutting have risen from roughly 20,000 posts at the end of 2013 to 120,000 last autumn. That's a 600% rise. But the number of actual cable households has not declined by 600%. So this is damning evidence that cord cutting isn't a big deal.
Well, Brian. I mean, in all fairness, I think clearly they were talking about our podcast, right?
They were saying 600% more people have watched Cord Killers, but yes, none of them have cut
the cord. And everybody is talking about it.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. To me, this is like, the buzz is rising around cord. People are starting to, more and people are investigating it and talking about it. Have people not done it? Sure. We've talked about all the reasons why cord cutting is not skyrocketing, but that doesn't mean that the tide isn't moving that way.
Yeah. The Hollywood Reporter has sources who say that Warner Brothers is in the early stages of developing a Matrix reboot, with Zach Penn being sought to write the treatment and Creed's Michael B. Jordan as the headliner. I don't know how to feel about this, because the last time I had the thought, that's way too soon for a reboot, was Batman Begins. Turns out I was wrong. Batman Begins needed to happen.
I hope it's an actual literal reboot where, like, the movie just starts with the aliens turning everything off and on again.
It's about Texas. It turns out it's a situation comedy about an alien.
We could have stopped AI. Keanu Reeves this whole time if we just turned everything off and turned it on again.
Also, by the way, I watched two movies side by side, Kung Fu Panda and The Matrix. And
when you say side by side, you mean like the ABC
at
News
the same
thing?
Time?
Where might as well. Might as well have been the same thing, because they were the same movie. If chew on that for a bit.
All right. Maybe I will watch them side by side. Let's move on to some dispatches from the front. the front of cord cutting, you know, the battle. Hey, Kaylee wrote in. Thank you, Kaylee. Just wanted to throw my 2 cents, or rather yen, in here. In the last episode, you were talking about flipping through channels on analog cable TV before digital. A streaming service with a similar feature launched in Japan last year. It's called Ameba TV, A-M-E-B-A. And the interface is designed to allow swiping through channels of content quickly and easily. There's almost zero lag between channels, and you can even see the edges of other channels as you browse. It does have a program guide, which mostly seems to be for their paid premium DVR service, but the app and channels are totally free. 20 plus channels of content available on streaming devices and mobile, however, only in Japan.
Fair enough. Meanwhile, Bill Teller writes us saying, that's not what he said. That's what I'm saying. He says, hey, I absolutely love the podcast and I did subscribe. Quick thought. On Viacom and CBS, I couldn't care less about anything on their channels. I don't think they have anything like Walking Dead or Game of Thrones to give them much leverage, so they're probably hurting themselves. Also, I was really let down by CBS All Access. I tried out, but all the classic shows like Star Trek, Cheers, and others have their entire back catalog available on both Hulu and Netflix, and I think some on Prime. What I really wanted was The Big Bang Theory, but I didn't even get the current season. Just the most recent 4 or so episodes, and in my area, I can't even get live CBS stream, so this is hot garbage as far as I'm concerned. That's a really good point. A lot of people, Tom, don't know that there's CBS Studios and there's CBS, the broadcasting company.
Those are the same company, yep.
Right, but CBS Studios makes content that you watch on Fox and NBC and other
sometimes
places.
They made American Idol, for instance, which was on Fox.
Correct.
I wonder what – I think we may have confused Bill, because he says, regarding Viacom and CBS, those are not the same company. Two separate companies used to be part of the same company. Not anymore. There was talk that they were going to remerge. They didn't. And the most recent thing we talked about was not CBS but Viacom saying, we don't want to be on PlayStation View. We don't want to be on – we're not available on the YouTube upcoming network. So he's complaining about CBS, and his complaints about CBS seem, you know, fairly reasonable here. But the story was about Viacom. CBS is actually going to be on the YouTube service. CBS is on the PlayStation View service. So there's a little bit of confusion going on between those two, I think.
Yeah.
Kenny wrote in and said, in response to John's questions a few weeks ago about pre-ordering a physical disc and getting the digital copy early, there are a few options that Kenny knows about. The first is Vudu's Disc Plus Digital service, where you can pre-order the Blu-ray on Vudu.com or the mobile app and get instant access to the digital copy. Shipping is sometimes free, sometimes not, and comes from Walmart.com, which owns Vudu, usually very close to, if not before, the physical release date. The only major downside to the service is that they currently don't work with UHD Blu-rays. Sometimes you can pre-order the UHD from Walmart and get the digital copy, what they refer to as InstaWatch, when it comes out, but it's a crapshoot at best. And neither Warner Brothers or Disney titles are available through the Disc Plus digital program. So thank you. Yeah, we did mention the Vudu program, but this is much more detail about it. Appreciate that, Kenny. He also says the other option is BestBuy.com, which I did not know about. He says, I'm not as familiar with it, but if you pre-order select titles like Sing, they will email you a digital copy code soon after they ship you the disc when it comes out. So you may be still waiting for the disc in the mail, but you can watch it on the digital. Thanks. That is very helpful, Kenny.
Meanwhile, Tom Mahoney writes in saying, hi, Tom and Brian. In your discussion of BritBox, I started thinking, how do you create a successful back catalog streaming service? You mentioned Netflix lackluster original offerings when it was called Netflix Streaming, but that was okay for them because they were a successful DVD by mail company. Amazon's initial offerings did nothing to pique my interest, but I didn't care because all I wanted was the 2-day shipping. Any other successful service that focuses on back catalog falls into the category of being owners of the content that they're making available? Hulu, CBS All Access, HBO Go/Now. Can you think of any path to success for a streaming service that primarily offers back catalog without either having some other successful money-making venture or by being content owners themselves? I would say yes to all of that, but I would say those are the traditional positions of people who are of companies who are pioneers in a new emerging field. I would say now if you wanted to launch a company, you could get investors and you could today you can say, hey, we're going to stream a bunch of stuff online. It's going to make a lot of people happy. We're going to make a lot of money. And a lot of people would say, like, well, how much are you spending and what content do you have? That was not the case 10 years ago. 10 years ago, the very idea of it was new and strange and nobody was willing to invest in it. But I feel like you would have no shortage of investors nowadays.
Well, and the other thing that is funny, Tom is absolutely right when he says it's a way harder if you don't have an existing business or an existing catalog, right? Like trying to cobble together a catalog. But he's writing in response to our discussion of BritBox. ITV and BBC own the content. BBC certainly owns the content in most of the cases. This isn't because they don't own the content. This is because they already sold the content.
Right.
This is like if Netflix had been making originals for 50 years and suddenly realized, oh, crap, we sold a bunch of those originals to a bunch of different people, so we can't keep them all on Netflix. I mean, Netflix's advantage is they never were making originals until they decided to. And so except for a couple of the very earliest ones, like House of Cards, they have the rights to stream these episodes in every single market they work in.
Right.
Finally, Mark Davey says, as a British expat in the U.S., there are 750,000 of us. All right. BritBox was a huge promise and a total failure in execution. My biggest hate is no news except the papers, Question Time, Newsnight, Panorama, all missing. I thought Question Time was in there. I thought I'm pretty sure I saw Question Time in there, but he's right. I did not see Newsnight. The classic comedy is just PBS leftovers. Well, exactly. PBS has the rights to all the good stuff. No classic BBC shows like Two Ronnies and Dave Allen. So I'm going to be sticking with YouTube since it has a better selection of classic BBC TV than the service, which should be called Brit Soapbox.
How wild that YouTube, we're kind of going back, and that YouTube is that gray market where it's not quite piracy, but you know that oftentimes the clips uploaded that are relevant aren't from the actual sources or aren't authorized.
Well, that's the idealistic universe of Content ID, is that if it's not uploaded by the owner can say, that's fine, I'll allow it as long as I get to monetize it.
Right. It's wild.
Well, you know what else is wild? We're done. This was a great episode. We love having guests, but sometimes it's just good to get back.
Oh, no, good. Relaxing, Tom. Just taking it easy. Just us
boys. Relaxing time. Make it Cord Killers time. Our website is cordkillers.com. Our email address is cordkillers@gmail.com. We're live on diamondclub.tv Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. We will kill all the cords again next week. See you then.
Hey, guys. Tom and Brian here. We just wanted to say thank you to all of our $5 patrons who keep us loud, live, and independent. You guys make Cord Killers the production that it is.
Your name appears in the video credits and appears in our hearts. And if you'd like to become one of them or see who they are, you can go to patreon.com/cordkillers.
You'll need to do more than just go there, though. You'll have to sign up and, you know, pledge an amount. But
unless you just want to see who they are.
Well, I mean, you could gawk. That's a little creepy, isn't it?
If you want to be a gawker,
let's go
with you.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.